Yes, on behalf of myself and my two minor children, good morning, Your Honours, and may it please the Court. Essentially, I'd like to start by saying that the District Court made numerous errors in this case. First and foremost, it appears that the District Court did not construe the complaint in the best interests, or did not construe the complaint reading it in the best light for the plaintiffs. That's pretty clear from the judgment rendered by the Court. I've mentioned this in my brief. It appears that at one point the judge actually says, thus it appears to the court that Firth may have been simply doing her job. That's something which betrays the inability of the court to properly read the complaint and construe it in the favour of the plaintiffs. He's even made numerous factual errors. What's clearly alleged in the complaint is that when the father was interviewed by the social worker got upset because the father was asking questions. He was wanting to know what the allegations were. The social worker left.
Let me ask this, and I think in this case you are the plaintiff, if I understand correctly, right?
That's correct.
So you know the facts well.
Yes.
You indicate that the defendant's actions had a chilling effect. In what way were you chilled by the alleged retaliation? Seemed to me you were really active in protecting yourself, were not chilled at all. What am I missing?
Well, I'm not sure if the fact whether I was chilled or not is the standard here. I think it's if the reasonable person, if the average person was chilled, and the average person would certainly be chilled, and I was chilled, obviously. It's very worrying, and I put this in the complaint. I put that when I mentioned the damages. It's very worrying when you think the government's out to get you for whatever reason, and they're putting you on child abuse registers. Sure. That is chilling.
What case or cases would you cite that include social workers in the, if you will, the literature, so that social workers would know that they were potentially liable for what occurred in this case?
Well, there's no case directly on point, Your Honor, but that's not required. I believe in an obvious case, it's simply not required, and my basic submission is that this is most definitely an obvious case. I would say that common sense dictates that. The Supreme Court, and I think I've cited a couple of cases to that effect, have clearly stated that a public employee or somebody in administrative or with police powers cannot retaliate against somebody for exercising their First Amendment rights. And I believe I cited Crawford L. versus Britton, and there's Hartman and Mann, I believe, which say that. The cases of White and Kinsella both specifically provide that there is an exception to the rule that there has to be a case on point, and that's in the event that the case is obvious.
They both okay. Well, but in this case, you got social workers. They have a tough job. I think you would agree with that, even though you don't like these particular ones. They're doing what they think is necessary to protect children. It's a tough job. You don't agree with the way they did it. But how are they supposed to know, based upon the status of the law, that what they did was a violation of your constitutional rights?
Well, first of all, it's common sense. I mean, every social worker must know that it's wrong to fabricate allegations and place somebody on the child abuse register. They must know that. They cannot possibly know that.
Okay, that's okay. But what about, for example, interviewing the children in school without your consent? Well, how would they know that was a violation of your constitutional rights?
I agree with Your Honor on that. Then I'm not alleging that they're personally liable for that. There is no clear case which says a social worker may not interview children at school without parental consent, and I'm only suing the county for that.
What are the allegations that you say they fabricated?
Well, they fabricated that I'd abused my children, and they placed me on the register. That's what they
Well, let's separate. So I thought your retaliation claims were based on encouraging the mother to get custody. It sounds like you're putting that aside. That's not part of what you're arguing right now.
No, there's two bases to it. One is that they directly retaliated by trying to suborn the mother to get custody. And secondly, they further retaliated.
But in that one, have you alleged that they fabricated anything? Or just that they shouldn't have been encouraging the mother to do that?
Well, yes, it's both in a sense. I mean, what they did was they went to the mother and they said, you have to apply for custody, or essentially we'll do it for you, we'll take the kids from you. And
but do you have any evidence that at the time they were doing that, they didn't have real concern about the children? I mean, maybe they later figured out they don't have so much concern, but at the time that they did that, isn't there reason, even in the limited materials we have, to believe that they had reason to think that there was some concern?
No, there isn't. There's no reason whatsoever. They had no reason whatsoever to think that. And I've pled that quite clearly. They never told me what the allegations were. I specifically asked them that. When I was interviewed, the only thing they could come up with was that I'd been drinking and driving with my children. I've had a driver's license for all my life over in Europe and here. Never had a DUI. There's not an iota of evidence that I drink and drive. I don't. There's no evidence for any of this. It was all, as amazing as it may seem, they made it all up. And I believe if this case proceeds and I can go to discovery, I'll prove it as well.
And you're alleging that this was done after you spoke up and objected to the interviews.
Exactly what I'm saying. What happened was they came to my house unannounced, and they said I had a substance abuse problem. Whatever, I have no idea what they're talking about, even to this day. Then I repeatedly asked this lady what the allegations were against me. She refused to tell me point blank. And I said, what are you alleging I've done? And they wouldn't tell me. And then she got the supervisor on the phone. It's all in the complaint. And then she fled almost in a very emotional state. And the next thing I know, I'm on the receiving end of an ex-party application to take my kids from me. And this is directly related to, this is retaliation. I sent them a letter. I faxed it to them. It was quite an intemperate letter. I was pretty angry at the time. They received it. They obviously said, all right, let's get this guy. And that's what happened. And I believe if I can take this case to discovery, I'll prove that.
And as to the listing, so I know that the district court thought you weren't even ever listed, but I know you think that that was not an uncharitable construction of the complaint or unreasonable.
Yeah.
So if we take your view that you were listed, how long do you think you were listed?
Well, I would say could have been at least maybe 2 months, something like that. It's impossible for me to know without conducting discovery.
And it doesn't seem that you have any allegations that in that time you were prevented from coaching, prevented from chaperoning field trips or anything else. Is that right?
I wasn't prevented from doing that, but I had to declare it to the police because at the time I was getting harassed enormously. I had the cops come round and I had to disclose that to them. I had to say that I was listed because I believed I was listed. And I still do.
I wasn't sure what you meant. So in that interaction, when you said you had to disclose to the police, what was the circumstance that meant you had to disclose to the police?
Well, what happened was, when all this was going on, and largely related to this, I had the police, my wife was calling the police. I had numerous welfare checks, and I had the police come around the welfare check when I was with the children, and they did ask me. They said, "Have you ever had a problem?" And I had to say, yeah, I'm sorry, I've just been listed. I had to tell them that because that was about a week after I got the letter from them saying that I'd been listed.
So the police came because you owed your ex-wife some money, she claimed, is that correct?
They came because my ex-wife called a welfare check on me when I was with the children.
So is Exhibit F the document that... that says you were listed?
No, that's yet another exhibit. This was going on constantly for about 2 months when I was getting constantly harassed. And when I told the police I was listed was when the police, and I don't believe there's an exhibit to that, I don't believe I ever got the police report, was when they came round my house on a welfare check and they specifically asked me whether or not I'd had problems with CPS and I had to say, yes, sorry, I've just been listed.
And what was your basis at that point for thinking you'd been listed?
Because I received official correspondence from CPS saying I had been listed. And I received.
Because Exhibit F sounds more like the social workers were saying something to the State Department of Justice, which then would need to list you. And since there's a lag and they eventually corrected it, I wasn't sure Exhibit F showed that you actually were listed.
I'm not sure that they did. Maybe they did correct it. I don't know without conducting discovery what they really did. But what happened was I received official correspondence from CPS saying that I had been listed. Subsequently, I called
them. And is that correspondence in the record?
I'm not sure if that is in the record. It may not be, but I certainly pled it. Then subsequent to that, I called them up and I said, what are you listing me for? Because 2 weeks prior, they'd informed the court that there was... that it was all inconclusive. So it went from inconclusive to being conclusive for I've no idea why. That's why I'd like to conduct discovery, of course. Then I subsequently called them. They said, yes, you have been listed. And they said, would you like help filling the forms out? So not only did they send me correspondence saying they'd listed me, they also confirmed that verbally to me. So I'm perplexed that they're claiming I'm not listed. Okay. I don't believe them.
Other questions by my colleagues? All right. Thank you, counsel.
Yeah, thank you.
So we'll hear from the county and for the defendants.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Christina Snyder. I represent the individual social worker defendants and the county. This Court should affirm the District Court's ruling for three reasons. The social workers are entitled to qualified immunity. The social workers...
Let me ask you this, Counsel. As you know, First Amendment retaliation doctrine has been applied across the range of a whole bunch of government actors. I don't find any for social workers, but doesn't common sense suggest that they should also prospectively be included in the list of those who can violate people's constitutional rights by committing a First Amendment retaliation act?
Of course, all government actors can commit a constitutional violation, but there is no clearly established precedent, or there's no...
Right, I understand that.
Right.
But so is your argument that there was no clearly established precedent that included social workers, or that there's no clearly established precedent that said that these activities by social workers were unconstitutional?
It's actually a combination of both. And that there are two prongs to the qualified immunity analysis, and sometimes the courts do decide to look at the first prong, whether there was a constitutional violation, in order to inform the second prong, whether there was precedent that held that this particular constitutional violation was clearly established. And the reason for that is because the facts are so particularized. So here we have to look at the fact that this is a social worker context. That's A. And we have to look at precisely what the social worker did here. So this is a social worker context where the social workers are supposed to be protecting the welfare of the children. And the First Amendment cases that are cited by Mr. Kapp, and that the Skoog case, Duran, Ford case, all of those you have malicious prosecution, malicious arrest. A person said, shot off his mouth, according to those cases, and then the police used their police powers and they arrested the person. That's not what the social workers are doing here. Not exercising any police powers. They're not arresting anybody. They're just investigating, and they're making recommendations in order to ensure the welfare of the children.
But so, as Mr. Kapp made clear, he hasn't been allowed to conduct discovery. We don't really know exactly what happened. I'll be honest, maybe he doesn't have the strongest case, but this case was dismissed at the pleading stage. And don't we have enough to get beyond qualified immunity at the pleading stage? That government official, he's pled that these were government officials who retaliated against him because he exercised his First Amendment rights. Now, can he prove that at trial or to survive a dispositive motion? I don't know. But he hasn't been allowed to conduct any discovery. Shouldn't he be allowed to do that?
No, Your Honor. Okay. Qualified immunity can be decided on a motion to dismiss. And this court has recently done so.
Well, I recognize that. I guess I'm hung up on the fact that how specific does the prior case have to be? If we require it to be on all four, on all fours, then is any case going to survive qualified immunity? I mean, we have previous cases that have said government officials in the role of a police officer, a prison official, a school board, and postal service inspectors, and perhaps more, can't retaliate on First Amendment grounds. Do we have to have a case that says specifically social workers can't do it? Shouldn't they take notice that all government officials, when a court's addressed this question, they've always ruled that government officials can't do this?
No, Your Honor. Those cases are not specific and particularized enough to this context to have put the social workers in this case on notice because of the distinct job of social workers and the distinct context in which they do their work. They are supposed to be protecting the welfare of the children. They are required under the welfare code and the penal code to conduct an investigation. They had to go interview children. They had to go talk to Deborah Kapp. They had to do these things. So they are required to do some things. And then they're also required to make recommendations, as the district court found, Perhaps Ms. Firth was just doing her job. They're required to protect the welfare of the children, so there needs to be a case that's in this particularized context to show that Ms. Firth was violating the First Amendment rights. And further, the record in this case is certainly sufficient at this point to affirm the denial, affirm the court's holding below.
And as you know from the way you answered the question, you know that Pearson allows us to answer either prong
sure.
in whatever order we decide. And probably one of the reasons we don't have anything about social workers is that people have gone to the second prong and said, well, in this case, no matter what, it doesn't work. If we conclude that social workers should not be excluded, but there's no liability in this case, therefore there would be qualified immunity, is that something to which you and your clients would object? In other words, if we found that social workers should be listed among the others that Judge Bastian has listed as being potentially capable of violating constitutional rights under a First Amendment retaliation theory, but arguably perhaps not, and they didn't do it in this case, would you have any objection to that?
No, Your Honor. They did not violate the First Amendment in this case.
So can you explain why? So let's assume social workers are covered by the First Amendment, which you'd have to make an argument why they're not covered by retaliation aspects of the First Amendment or something. What is your argument that there isn't a constitutional violation here if we get past just the clearly established issue?
Well, just on the record, and as Your Honor referred to earlier, we can look at the declaration of Deborah Kapp, which was attached to the complaint, so it's part of the record. And as you see, Ms. Kapp stated multiple reasons that she was going to seek temporary sole custody of her children that had absolutely nothing to do with Ms. Firth's recommendation. And the Iqbal Twombly standard of plausibility doesn't require that you just assume everything that the plaintiff has alleged is automatically correct and plausible. There's the doctrine of the obvious alternative explanation.
So Neves was a recent Supreme Court case that talked about retaliation and arrest and said if there's probable cause to arrest, we're not really worried about whether there might be also a retaliation motive. It seems like you're making an argument like that here as to the custody issue. Am I right?
It's a similar argument. I'll concede that Nieves doesn't actually control this case, but it is a similar argument that there are multiple other reasons, well, with one distinction. There are multiple other reasons that Ms. Firth made this recommendation. However, in Nieves, the court also acknowledged that if there was some retaliation, you also had to plead that there was no probable cause. I'd argue in this case there's no evidence of retaliation at all. All we have is Mr. Kapp saying, well, obviously, because Ms. Firth made this recommendation, that's retaliation.
Can you speak about the listing? So how do you explain the listing, the CACI listing?
That was a mistake. And there are actual allegations in the record, FAC 54, where one of our employees, the county's employees, called him and said, you were not listed on the CACI. And then the letter, which I believe is attached as Exhibit I, again, said, you were not listed on the CACI for this. It's an unfortunate mistake.
But he's alleged other places that he was told he was. So I think he has a pretty strong argument that charitably reading the complaint with inferences in his favor would suggest that he was listed for a brief time.
Well, again, I'll go back to the obvious. There are two responses to that. First is the obvious alternative explanation, the Iqbal Twombly standard of obvious alternative explanation. We can assume, a hyper-technical reading of the complaint, we can say, yes, he says he was on the CACI for a short period of time, and therefore he must have been. Or you can look at the exhibits and say, our social workers sent a letter to the family court on September 18th saying, these allegations are deemed inconclusive. They sent a letter to the family court. They made a representation. Well, a couple weeks later, he gets a listing, the CACI listing, saying these allegations are deemed substantiated. You can look at those two allegations, and then also the allegation that a couple of weeks later we had a person from the county call him and say, sorry, you were never listed on the CACI. And there's a letter that says, sorry, you weren't listed on the CACI. Look at those allegations, and the obvious alternative explanation, which is more plausible in this case, is that it was a mistake. It was just a mistake. But even if it's...
Why is your explanation more plausible than his? I mean, isn't that a material issue of fact? And shouldn't the court have allowed him to proceed with discovery and perhaps rule in the county's favor at the dispositive motion stage? But your client created an issue of fact on its own without any prompting and sent... conflicting information. So why is the county's explanation more plausible than Mr. Kapp's explanation?
Well, now we're digging really deeply into the Iqbal Twombly standard. But if you have two explanations which are just as plausible as each other, which I don't think we have here because there's so much evidence that it was just a mistake, but if you have two explanations for conduct that are just as plausible, you have two obvious alternative explanations, it's insufficient for the plaintiff just to plead, this happened and it was bad and there was nefarious intent. The plaintiff also has to plead facts which would show that the defendant's alternative explanation is implausible, that that did not occur. And all we have are his conclusory statements that obviously the social workers were retaliating against him.
Other questions? All right, thank you. We could probably talk about this for a long time, but we thank you both for your argument.
Thank you.
The case just argued is submitted.